Agency use of suspension and debarment against federal contractors slowed down a little bit last year, but you've got to look deeper into the latest report from the Interagency Suspension and Debarment Committee to fully understand what the slight decrease means. Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller put on his miner's helmet to dig out the trends in this week's edition of his reporter's notebook. He joins me now to discuss. And Jason, I guess coming right off the Independence Day holiday, it's great to talk about suspension and debarment. And what is going on?
So the raw numbers just on the surface. Let me start with suspensions. There were 918 suspensions in 2015. That's down from 1,009 suspensions in 2014. So about 91 fewer. Still higher than in 2012 and 2013 when the government suspended 836 and 887 government contractors respectively. Proposed debarments. Now this is when you get a letter, you're not only suspended, but we're going to debar you unless if you can tell us differently. 2,196 government contractors faced the proposed debarment in 2015. That's down from 2,241 in 2014, so about 45 fewer. Again, it's also lower than in 2013, but more than in 2010 through 2012. So we're seeing some trends here.
I just can't help but notice that number, 2,100, 2,200, that's also the number of protests that go to the GAO every year. Is that some kind of a cosmic constant?
I don't think it's related.
No relation.
Right, there's no connection. Then let me go debarments real quick. 1,873, about 56 fewer than 2014, and still about 100 to 200 more than in 2013 and 2012. A couple of agencies, HUD suspended the most contractors with 170. The Army was second with 137. Interestingly enough, five agencies suspended no contractors. Commerce, Treasury, and the Social Security Administration were among the big ones that didn't do any suspensions last year. The Army debarred the most contractors at 456. Homeland Security and HUD each debarred more than 240. So those are just the raw numbers based on trends and what has happened.
All right, but you're saying these raw numbers really don't tell the whole story.
I'm not just saying it. I actually talked to some experts who are saying that, too. The decreases are good. It's important that there are decreases, but they're very small by percentage if you think about it. And, you know, maybe there's a correlation between spending going down, so therefore fewer contractors are bidding, fewer contractors have contracts, and therefore they're not getting in as much trouble. But I think if you dig a little deeper, and I think this is where that comes in, the real telling number is there were a 30% increase in agencies using what they call a show cause or investigative letters, and there was a 25% increase in the use of administrative agreements. Now, I talked with Rob Burton, former OFPP deputy administrator and now a lawyer with Crowell Mooring here in Washington. He says this is an important change because it's really too often agencies go right to suspension or proposed debarment when they're upset with a contractor. It's almost saying the contractor is guilty before proven innocent. And he goes, by using these show cause letters or at least investigators, it gives the vendor an opportunity to explain what's going on before they get this penalty. I also spoke with Dave Nadler, a partner with Blank and Rome, another procurement attorney, and he offers a very interesting related observation why there's this increase in the use of show cause instead of agencies jumping right to suspension and proposed debarments. He says the overall decrease in these numbers can be attributed to efforts over the last few years by the Interagency Committee to train agencies on how to use suspension and debarment as tools. He goes, previously, agencies lacked the appropriate sophistication to evaluate matters or even lacked a program, a suspension and debarment program at all. He goes, now that there is this groundwork, agencies are understanding it better, have more defined and proactive processes, and are taking less drastic results to work with agencies. Again, going back to Rob Burton, he says many times just by talking to the vendor ahead of the proposed debarment or suspension can solve the issue more quickly and with a lot less aggravation.
All right, so a lot of more subtlety, a little bit more sophistication in the approach, and more getting the outcome you want without drastic means.
Correct.
Basically.
And the outcome, long story short, Tom, is this idea of fixing the problem. Whatever the problem is, fixing it and doing it as quickly as possible. Rob Burton gave me an example of one of his clients was proposed for debarment. They responded, and it's been 6 months. They're waiting for 6 months for a response from the government. And he goes, this poor contractor's just hanging out to dry for 6 months.
Wow. We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. Also in your notebook, you're writing about a new policy coming from the Office of Management and Budget coming over the next month on enterprise risk management. What's that about, and what did you learn about that policy?
We've been following this idea of ERM, Enterprise Risk Management, for the last year and a half or so. And Dave Mader, OMB's controller, says he expects the final version of the update to circular A123 to be out in the next month. Now, we've been hearing this for quite a while, so I think we'll believe it when we see it. But they're changing this big circular, which every agency must follow, to really focus on enterprise risk management.
A123 is the financial management focused.
Yes, but they're trying to expand it so it's not just for the CFO community, but really for all communities. And that's where this enterprise risk management effort comes in. Now, Mader has been clear over the last year, as we've reported this, Tom, that the circular will create a government-wide framework for enterprise risk management, and it gives the agency the flexibility to create an approach that meets their specific needs, so not a one-size-fits-all. The policy will not require agencies to name someone as a chief risk officer, a CRO, but someone will have to be held accountable and be in charge to manage risk. So if your agency calls them a CRO and my agency just says they're in charge of risk, that's all fine by OMB. Just whoever, so there's a belly button that has to be pushed. Mader also says that he's going to actually formalize this interagency ERM council and transform it into really a body that's equivalent to the CIO or the CFO council. So a little more heft there as well. So there's a lot going to be coming out with this policy.
Well, the question now is, if agencies buy into this and they start looking at their risk management and their risks, we have transition coming. Yep. And so at some point, will they transmit those risks that they have uncovered to the incoming team that they don't know who it is yet?
And in many ways, that's why OMB is putting out and updating A123 now. I mean, it's been in the works for quite a while, but the goal is to give the next administration, no matter who it is, the best view they've maybe ever had about what risks each agency faces and which programs face the biggest risks. And part of that transition piece is OMB is going to release an enterprise risk management playbook. Now, we know that OMB loves their playbooks, like they love their dashboards, but I think this is just a way to help agencies either continue their risk management program or begin a new one. And really, the playbook really is just going to focus on embedding ERM in the structure and the leadership of a particular department and make it really part of the fabric of how they manage their organization. Now, again, Mader says, we understand there's a new administration coming in, and this is going to give them some critical information as they begin planning, as they begin taking over the agencies and the 2019 budget. As soon as they get in, that's the first thing they're going to have to begin working on. So all this can come together. And one other interesting thing about this, Tom, is that Mader said, we don't want this just to be another OMB directive, another OMB policy. They really believe that changing the way the organization and the government is structured, the way the agency looks at risk, is so important. It will make such a big payoff. He really wants it to be, the overused term, the big culture change.
All right. Well, we'll have to see if it carries over into the next team, because otherwise a few months of effort really won't change anything that much.
And I think this is a good government effort. And again, same thing with IT, with procurement. No one's going to come in and go, no, let's not look at risk. Let's move on to something else. So I think that's what OMB is expecting.
Maybe the program assessment risk management tool.
Oh, no. Robert Shea just got a little shiver.
All right. Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller, thanks so much for that update.
Always a pleasure.
You can read Jason's notebook online now at federalnewsradio.com and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click share with friends.